Life sure gets busy, doesn't it? Well, we understand. With all the certifications you have, finding the right kind of continuing education that fits your schedule can be a real challenge. That's where the FlightBridge Ed podcast subscription comes in. For less than $5 a month, the FlightBridge Ed podcast subscription gives you top-notch accredited CE while you listen. Visit FlightBridgeEd.com for more information or to sign up today. The FlightBridge Ed podcast subscription, another way we're being your partner in discovery.
This is Second Shift.
How are you doing? And then I just want you to do it. I want you to give it to him.
I'm so stoked and excited that we got these two guys on today. I'm doing awesome. Well. We had our first big webinar training today, so that went okay. Had 30 or 40 EMS providers, and we're going to do it the next 2 days. But let's just turn this over. Wow. Hey, Randy and Jason, it's great to see you.
Good to see you.
Yeah. My friends that we've watched a couple of Michigan games together, the Sklar brothers, a couple of Michigan grads, but obviously some very well-known comedians, things like Cheap Seats, which is, you know, classic. Mm-hmm. Dumb People Town, which is one of my favorite podcasts. And the podcast that gets me through every day and gives me 30 minutes of time that I don't have to worry about COVID, the Virus Chronicles, the Andy Pods. Mm-hmm. just wanted to, you know, thank you guys for coming on and being able to talk to our listeners, our EMS providers out there.
Thanks so much for doing this, and thanks for letting us be a part of this. We, you know, I'm sure so many people out there have connections to EMS workers and whatnot. And ER doctors, our cousin's an ER doctor down in San Diego, and he's been working on the front lines. And so, you know, it's our first cousin. We know this intimately. My wife's stepfather down in Sanibel Island, Florida, was the fire commissioner. So he works very closely with the EMS. Ooh. And there's, you know, it's part of our lives. So we're happy to give you guys just a little bit of a break, talk a little comedy, because that's what we've been trying to do. We started this daily podcast, Scarborough Country, the Virus Edition. And it was, like Ritu said, just as a chance to give people 30 minutes to not think about stuff. And
can we find stories of people doing dumb things or people doing amazingly inspiring things? I know Ritu's in Portland, and we heard the story of a strip club in Portland.
Lucky Devil
repurposing their strippers. I always love it when businesses get creative.
This is the time to pivot right now.
It's the time to pivot. So they're repurposing their strippers and having the strippers deliver food topless to people, which,
first of all, if you're ordering food from a strip club,
there are other, you have other,
you
are, options.
You have a lot of decisions you need to reevaluate in your entire life.
You have other options.
Agreed.
But they of course called it Boober Eats, which, come on.
I don't know about that. I would have gone with Pullmates personally. That's my,
I think Grubhub still works. That's just me.
Grubhub works, and so does Meals on Heels.
Meals on Heels.
So, but they, okay. So on paper, this is a great idea. A topless woman's going to deliver your food. It's going to give it some pageantry, some excitement.
Some pizzazz.
But you know there's always a moment when you get food delivered, and especially in this time of the pandemic, not all everything's working in the right way, and you look down in the bag, and you're like,
we ordered the green salsa. You gave us the red salsa. So now you have to have a very logistical discussion
with a woman who's got her shirt off. She's no longer topless.
You're arguing with a woman with her shirt off on your front lawn.
And you're like, then looking past her while she's calling her manager to see if they can bring you another. You're looking at her car, and you're like, I don't want to see the stripper's car.
I don't want to see the mask. Masking tape on the bumper.
I don't want to see that she's a padiddle. She has one light out on the front.
She's got a car seat.
There's a baby in the car seat.
Okay. Yes. Now the fantasy is completely
hit. The thing is this, and this is what you have to remember. No matter what you order, you're going to get crabs.
That's when just the way it goes when you order from this place.
And that's a medical term. I believe that is a medical
term. That is a medical term.
That's right.
Also in the news medically, Elon Musk and his girlfriend Grimes had a baby that we found out about just a couple hours after it was born. That's too quick. You know, Spencer?
No, they found out because they were tweeting about it. So they named their kid
A
A equals A dash A X minus A.
I like
X minus 12.
I was so happy to be done with algebra. Now I got to learn it again to know who this kid is.
I was like, I can't believe they came out with a worse name than Grimes.
Yeah, you did it. You figured that out.
You did it.
But the best part was, so after the baby was born,
they named it after their favorite aircraft.
And and if you're naming your kid after your favorite aircraft,
that means that Grimes and Elon Musk have gotten on private jets before, looked around and said, it's not my favorite.
It's not my favorite.
It's not so good. It's nothing to write home about. Private jet, not my favorite.
So she tweets out, you know, we named this fierce name after our favorite plane, the SR-17-17, and that's a big deal.
You know, because when you look down at the baby, the product of the love between two people, you want to be reminded of the soft Corinthian leather of a private jet.
Yeah. So they look at the baby and they name it that, and she tweets that out.
SR-17.
Then Elon Musk tweets out, doesn't even, I mean,
he's probably sitting right next to her
in the room. He tweets out, actually, it's the SR-71, not the SR-17. But yeah, yes. Sure. That's why we named
it. To which she then tweets back, oh, I'm sorry. I just had surgery to remove a child.
I almost died and I had a baby. And I'm like, don't you guys follow each other on Twitter?
Can't this discussion be going on in
this deep? Should be a DM discussion.
At least.
Why the hell are we all witnessing it? How about you turn to her and say it to her face? How about you say it? So now
we've said, look, Elon Musk is even going to have to pivot in this time. And our idea for Elon Musk is that he develop his own line of men's cologne.
Yes.
It's called Elon Musk.
Yes.
And it smells like you just burned your baby mama on Twitter about your baby. Yeah.
And we should, by the way, we should be trusted to be. When it comes to men's fragrances.
If we would have just done this in the 90s, we'd be so rich today, we wouldn't even be doing it.
We'd be the Elon Musk today. In the 1990s, we had an idea to create a cologne. It smelled for Macaulay Culkin, and it's called Home Cologne. It's cologne you wear
only when you're at
when
home.
You stay at home.
Perfect for the pandemic.
We're in it right now.
We could be selling case just palette.
Do you want to smell like Macaulay Culkin?
It smells like your house just got burned out.
There you go. So there you got all that. And, you know, we've taken this time, and I don't know if you guys have done this, but to just do like a deep cleaning of when you're around at home, it's like, just clean out, get rid of the stuff you don't use anymore. Just it totally makes you feel better. Donate clothes to people who need it. Some people who need it right now. There is that great feeling of recycling the stuff that you have and giving it to other people. And so I was cleaning out all the books on my daughter's bookshelf. My daughter, who's now in high school, cleaning out all the books because she had a lot of books that we used to read to her when she was little. And what I realized is the books you read to your kids when they're little
are terrible.
They're awful, but you don't care because all you're doing is just trying to get them to sleep. You'll read them anything.
When you have little kids, you're like, just please get these kids to sleep.
Get them down.
Put them down.
Put them down. Put them down like they're a horse with a broken leg.
Put her down.
Put her down. Take her out back and put her down.
She just woke up 20 minutes ago.
Put her down.
I don't care. I gotta get these damn kids to sleep.
So I had a whole shelf of fairy tales. And I don't know if you've read a fairy tale recently. Okay, we all know the stories, but I started to read them as I was putting them away.
They're crazy stories.
They are nuts. They read like police blotters in the state of Florida. If you were to put the phrase a Florida man or a Florida woman in front of the plot of a fairy tale, totally works.
Totally works.
Florida woman breaks into a house, eats their food, breaks a chair, and then is found passed out in the kid's bed. That's Goldilocks meth in Tampa Bay.
That's meth.
Florida man kisses a dead woman and tries to marry her.
What is that?
That is ecstasy in Orlando.
That's Molly.
Florida woman lures two children to her house using breadcrumbs with hopes of eating their faces off. That's bath salts and Pensacola.
Florida woman gets a DUI for trying to drive a pumpkin.
That's everywhere in Florida, all the time. And to me, it is kind of fun to think of Cinderella as a Florida woman getting pulled over by the cops that fateful night at like 12:10 in the morning.
They're like, ma'am, get down from the pumpkin.
You gotta get off the pumpkin.
Get down off the pumpkin. She's like, these mice were horses 10 minutes ago.
Sure they were, ma'am.
Ma'am, where's your other shoe? Where's the stripper shoe? Where's the stripper slipper? Where is it? Oh, it's at the palace with the prince.
Oh,
yeah. The only prince in your future are going to be some fingerprints. Let's go on down.
Yeah.
You think your stepsisters are evil? Check out the chicks in cell block H.
And that's all we got.
Hey, just want to thank all of you guys and thank everyone who's on the front lines for protecting us. This is like we've never seen anything like this in our lives. And we are so grateful to you guys because honestly, this could be a lot worse if we didn't have skilled people and people who care and people who are putting all of their expertise and energy into that. This is the only thing we know how to do. Hopefully make people laugh. Like we are counting on you guys to help us when we're in trouble, and you have. And so,
so you have our deepest and heartfelt thanks. So thank you.
Well, guys, thanks again for coming on and spending a few minutes with us.
Of course.
If you guys want, that was just a piece. Listen to them every day on their virus podcast. And then on June 4th, they're doing a comedy club, the Nowhere Club. Is that right?
It's called the Nowhere Comedy Club. So the podcast is called Scarborough Country, the virus edition. We do it every day. If you just want 30 minutes to just breathe, listen to our podcast every day. We talk about dumb stories and just have fun. And then there you go. And then Scarborough Country. Very nice. And then on June 4th, which is a Thursday, Thursday night,
7 p.m. Pacific,
we're going to do a stand-up show at the Nowhere Comedy Club. And you can just log in as a Zoom member. You get to laugh. We can hear you. It's so much fun. I think they cap it at like 390 people. Hopefully we'll sell it out. But we'd love to have you guys. If you like this, we'll give a longer version of it. And just thanks so much.
Thanks again, guys. Really appreciate it.
Appreciate you guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
You take care.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, that was pretty good.
That was great. They're a lot funnier than we are in the first 10 minutes.
Well, I mean, and look who's jumping in. Brandon, what's up, buddy?
What's up, Brandon?
Not much. I was just laughing. You think you guys put me on before? I had like tears.
Yeah, that was good.
Well, Brandon, you have a go ahead and tell the gang what you do for us on in the Flight Bridge world.
Yeah, you don't come out and hang out very often.
Yeah, that's right. No, I don't. So I do a lot of the behind the scenes stuff with the website and some of the IT needs. That's really the bulk of my work with Flight Bridge Ed. But I am a paramedic.
Yeah.
And I still work the road. So
you do? Great. Come on.
A little
You're
bit.
Still out there doing it, bro? Are you PPEing up?
I work this weekend. So, yeah. Staying busy. Damn.
You know one thing I wish those guys would have talked about? I don't know if you haven't been on Twitter today, you got to check it out. But there was – I feel like I got my newsroom stuff here. There was a company called Pasquale's Pizza and Wings that was – hooking up with Uber Eats and, you know, DoorDash and all these things. And it turns out it was all a ruse. Do you know what Pasquale's Pizza and Wings was? Chuck E. Cheese. Chuck E. Cheese.
They actually did a whole bit on that a couple of days ago on their virus podcast.
Oh my God. Like Twitter has gone crazy right now. Over this, I feel like it's been the big hoax and it's the big scam, but I think it's hilarious.
I think the lady who wrote it, because I heard it on the Sklar Brothers podcast, and I think the lady who wrote a letter to complain was like, "I'm going to come down there, what, talk to Chuck E. Cheese?"
Right.
That's their material, by the way, because it's funny.
So, anyway, well, happy EMS week.
Happy EMS week.
Yeah, happy EMS week.
It's kind of a big doings around here. I've been sharing all the EMS week stuff I've been seeing on social media. So that's pretty cool. You know, the COVID thing really cramped a lot of agency styles and trying to walk the line of how much do we do and what can we do? And, you know, because it's always been about, well, at least in my neck of the woods, you know, you come together, you celebrate, you cook some food, some barbecue, it's family time, you hang out, you do stuff, and that just ain't happening.
Yeah, I know.
Bummer.
Doing a lot of virtual stuff.
Yeah,
Facebook
yeah.
videos, Facebook Live.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I don't know if people heard where you're from, Brandon. Tell them.
Yes, so I'm from Connecticut.
Connecticut. That's a hot spot for the situation.
Well, it's definitely not in New York, but yeah, Fairfield County and that part of the state was a hot spot. Thankfully, we're on the decline. Actually, tomorrow is the first day, phase one of reopening the state.
Oh, wow.
So we will start to see some of the other non-essential businesses open slowly. Still no mass gatherings or any of that stuff. Schools closed for the rest of the year. I'm sure that's common everywhere. But the numbers are definitely trending in the right direction. And it's going to save everyone working. Yeah, right.
For now, this week.
But it's just been great to be part of the team and you know, the paramedics that I work with and my staff is really being out there on the front line and battling this every day. You know, as you guys know, the operations, EMS operations have changed. Hospital operations have changed drastically. And
everything.
I think
just
that everyone has, yeah, done an amazing job adapting to that quickly and just doing what we continue to do every day.
Exactly. I got to bring Torben back up. So Torben's watching. He is one of the 2020 mentorship program honorees.
Oh, fantastic.
Anyway, it's good to see you, brother. Congrats. Can't wait to work with you. It's going to be super fun. And you'll have access to all these dudes that are on the screen. Well, now, whether that's good or bad, I don't know. But
hey, I saw Jarvis is at least ducked in. I don't know if he's...
Today is him and his wife's 30th wedding anniversary. So yeah. He was going to jump on. I'm like, dude.
No, don't. But I think we upgraded. I mean, yeah,
we got Brandon.
We got the Sklar brothers.
Yeah.
I think
that was pretty cool. Yeah. You know, I wish we'd have had a little bit more time with them. You know, people may not know, but they completely rearranged their entire schedule to give us like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And that was just off of a DM from Ritu. And so that was really cool. So we didn't want to keep them. They're actually going to record a podcast, or they had just recorded a podcast and they were just sorted together. So this is not like they live together, right? They have their lives and they do stuff. But I believe it was Randy was in one of my favorite movies of all time, although I can't figure out who he was. And the movie is Bubble Boy. One of the most underrated comedic genius films of the last 20 years. If you haven't seen Bubble Boy, you got to watch it. And he was in it somewhere, and I don't have no idea who he was.
Oh, I think I've only seen pieces of that.
It's so good.
I've never seen it. I'll have to watch it.
It's so good.
It's a spoof of John Travolta, right?
Oh, you're talking about the boy in the bubble.
Yeah. Wasn't John Travolta in that?
Yeah, he was. Yeah, I guess so. It's more of a comedy version of that because, you know.
Yeah, it's a spoof.
He died. It was bad. This kid, I don't want to ruin it for you, but you just got to watch it. So he's born, he's got no immunities, he gets put in the bubble, and he grows up, and you just got to watch it. I don't know what else to tell you. Zach Galifianakis is in it. Vern Troyer, the little mini-me, he is in it. And he is Dr. Freak, Phreak, and he runs a freak show that's traveling around on the train. It's just really good. You got to watch it.
Yeah, I'm looking at the cast now.
Jake Gyllenhaal. Exactly. Jarvis jumped on anyway.
I did. I just have to call and help you out here. So I hop on. I see some funny dudes. And then you're talking about like people with immunodeficiencies and dying in bubbles. I figured I had to jump on and say
that. It was the best.
We're going to talk about antibody testing, and that was going to be our
that was our segue.
Look, the time. Got to go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, buddy, happy anniversary.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. We are sitting here at a beautiful bed and breakfast in Salado, Texas, exactly 0.5 miles from our house. You know, we were going to be in Scotland right now.
Right. That didn't work out.
We got COVIDed, so, you know, hell with the COVID. So we're going to do something. So we went to a bed and breakfast. And the good news here in Texas is Governor Abbott said the pandemic is over. Good news. We've declared victory. We're moving on now. So my abstinence is over, and since I'm not in Scotland right now,
hey,
figured I'd try a little scotch. So
cheers.
The wagon has passed me by, and it's time to enjoy again.
Well, I'm glad it's over, and the 1,800 new cases that you had on Friday were not probably didn't count.
That's no big deal.
No,
don't worry. About
no,
it.
our all-time high number of cases yet. It's a misnomer. Don't mind that. The 7 medics in our system out with COVID right now.
Oh man,
I saw a news story about Williamson County. All the way out here in Oregon.
Yeah, 25%. But hey, we fortunately, most of those people at the time, we only had 5 folks who were positive. It's up to 7 now. But most of those people were out with asymptomatic quarantines. We got them tested rapidly. They're negative. They're coming back in. So as a system, we're doing much better.
I think we lost Brandon, but I'm glad to hear that. You know, we've been so fortunate in our area, at least at my agency. Nobody's
got our whole area.
Our whole area. Like, we have been super lucky, and yeah, I'm just super thankful that things have gone well.
Yeah.
And well, it's interesting. So we have 7 medics out, 2 firefighters. We got a couple folks still being tested that we're hoping will come back negative. But what we're finding is it's most of our people are catching it either from home and bringing it to the station. And up until recently, we were not using universal face mask in the station. That's since changed because that's what got us. Most of our people out on asymptomatic quarantine were partners. So this stuff just runs rampant through a fire station.
That's what
Andy Coy from
Seattle, that's what he said too, mm-hmm. is that the biggest risk to the crew is the community and not the patients, especially if you're going into every patient encounter, you know, with the idea that they all have COVID.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. I see a note here from Nick Adams, but are y'all trusting the rapid test? Depends on what you mean by rapid. So if you're talking about a 10 to 15 minute lateral flow Chinese pregnancy antibody test, hell no. In no way, shape, or form should we trust that. We're talking about the rapid test, which is like 12 to 24 hours. And it's a viral PCR test.
Our viral PCR at my hospital is 4 hours now on the turnaround.
Boom.
It's getting better, man. It's getting better. And can you order them on anybody you want to order them on now?
The only asymptomatic with like no reason is the only person I can't. So like somebody just shows up and says,
I want to test.
I want to test. We can't, that's not, I could actually, I could make, but an asymptomatic person who's an exposure or a healthcare worker or works in a nursing facility, nursing home, we can test. So we are able to
test. And if they have just vague sniffles, you can test.
Yes.
Yeah.
Any symptoms. And then we're testing every inpatient psych admit gets tested because it's really hard to keep people apart in a psych ward. And everybody going to a surgery or a procedure gets tested.
Yep.
And it's, you know, when we, you know, when we talk about like a lot of the surgeries, like appendicitis, you know, they might come in at like 10 PM and they're not going to be done till the next morning. So they'll do the test and probably do the change their PPE around based on that.
And I think that makes sense because the catch here is not that COVID caused their appendicitis, obviously. It's that COVID didn't protect them from appendicitis. And you can have appendicitis and be an asymptomatic positive. So what they're doing is trying to protect everybody. Makes sense.
Turns out that Occam went on vacation this week.
He did. Occam is hanging out in the Caribbean with everything we fucking knew about science on the Caribbean. Absolutely.
That was a good use of the F-bomb. I'm gonna give you an A plus on that.
Yes, that was an earned F-bomb. That was
good.
It wasn't just frivolous.
Yeah, because I'm not down for the FF, you know, the frivolous F-bomb. You gotta go for it. So I see Nick was talking about the Abbott One test.
Yeah.
So interesting. The stuff I've read about that is everybody's bitching and moaning that it has 40% sensitivity on day one of exposure. Tell me a test that isn't has just shit numbers on day one of exposure.
How about a pregnancy test?
Yeah, day one, negative. If you just have sex, hop up, run to the bathroom, and pee on a strip, it's going to be negative.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you have to take things into consideration. Having said that, we're not using it. It's just not in our testing arsenal. But I think they may have gotten a little bad bit of press there.
Yeah. My wife chimed in, and she's been following this. This is like this whole COVID thing has been like the O.J. Simpson trial. Like everybody's that staying at home, you're watching news, right? But she's got a point here. We're like, our testing in Oregon is atrocious. It's atrocious. So our numbers don't look that bad.
Well, nope, not gonna say it. Wouldn't be prudent. Gonna be good. So it's you know, it's pretty bad in Texas too. It's horrible. But for the longest period of time, I could not test somebody if I wanted to. Got a fever of 103, a cough. You got little blow falling off toes. Can't see, sense anything. Just been to China. Nope, can't test you. Now I'm kind of like her too. I can test anybody I want to now. So there's definitely, I think, been a turnaround.
I mean, I love Michelle. You know that. I love you, Michelle.
All right, I hope she's watching still.
Yeah, I hope so.
I hear, I mean, but.
I don't really have a problem ordering a test. I mean, the only group that I really can't test is the asymptomatic, no reason to be. Now, one of the things that's a problem.
That might be now, though, right? Because I will tell you that I had a daughter-in-law that has had a fever for
days.
All the signs and symptoms, all of them. And she had gone to the doctor twice, and they said, the only way we can test you is if we admit you to the hospital.
So when this first started, the only testing we had in the entire state was the state public health lab.
Right.
The only people we were allowed to test were people who were admitted to the hospital. And that was, you know, most of March and even in kind of half of April.
Yeah. Well, that would have been the time frame for sure.
So it's definitely changed over time as stuff's come online. And part of the problem is some of the tests out there are total shit.
Yeah.
And certainly the antibody testing world, somebody brought up on the chat, IgM and IgG and phlebotomy, Ed Zafran. And some of the stuff out there is shit. And, you know, it's funny. I had a friend who made a joke that they were sick in November. And so they think they had it, which, by the way, everybody I know who was sick anytime from July to
February. July 1967.
I'm sure I had COVID. Now, you were really sick, Mike.
Yes, I was. I'm telling you, I can't wait. I can't wait to do an antibody test because I know I had it. I was patient six. I told you I was patient six.
But she said, well, she's got access to testing. I'm like, let's do it. It'd be cool if you knowing like if you were sick in November and you have antibodies, but then it was through a lab, you know, a private lab. A well-known lab company, but on the page where they describe the antibody test in really small fine print in the bottom, it said that this test has cross-reactivity with other coronaviruses. And at that point, the test is worthless because there's four circulating coronaviruses that we had this winter in the region.
Yeah.
And if there's cross-reactivity, it doesn't mean that you've had the SARS-CoV-2 coronavirus.
So I will tell you, we're using the Abbott IgG serum-based test. Yeah. And so that is reporting 95 to 98% sensitivity specificity and no cross-reactivity with additional coronaviruses. And that's those numbers are from an independent test.
Yeah, so the Abbott –
keeping in mind what an IgG tells you about.
Yeah, the Abbott IgG test – I think that one is also FDA approved not just an EU, or is it still just an EUA?
I don't know that there are any approved tests yet.
Okay. So, but that one, my understanding too, is on the Abbott IgG test and IgM test that it is a, there is no cross reactivity. And that's, right. that's really the fine print that you need to read. Cause there's a bunch of tests out there that are, that, that do have the cross reactivity.
Hey, right. And, but I think the thing that's useful to say is what the hell do you do with an IgG? So, we're doing it from a research standpoint because we want to find out what the exposure of our system is. It's not going to help any individual, and it's not really going to help our system. It's just going to give us an idea of what the exposure is. Now, it turns out that as it took us a while to get that up and running, and we're doing the blood sampling now, and we became a cluster. So now we have all these positives, and to get ourselves out of quarantine hell, we're just going to test everybody. I'm going to go have a brain sample done. All of us are going to get tested so that we can find those asymptomatics. Now, the cool thing is just happenstance. We're going to have viral PCR testing and IgG testing. And it's going to be really interesting to see what those two things look like together.
There was, we at my hospital system, they were doing a study on hospital caregivers. Anybody who was patient facing was eligible, and they were testing us for antibodies every other week. And they stopped because the prevalence in our work area was so small that it was, they had to stop it.
I just want everyone to know that we're not just going to talk about the coronavirus.
We're going to talk about the Bud virus and the Miller virus and the Guinness virus.
That's right.
Look, well, I didn't come here to talk about the dang coronavirus. I know people want to talk about it, and they want to talk about testing, and I get that. I love that. Super important. It's all of our lives right now. I could use a situation break.
I know. Jeff, you should go. I mean, I love you, and I'm happy to have you on, but it's your anniversary.
You're welcome to stay, but holy crap.
Well, I was kind of looking for a segue, and thank you, Ritu, for providing it. So before I punch out and go chill with my wife, I think we're going to go for a walk. It is now down to 86 degrees at 9 o'clock at night. But it's a pleasant, dry-ish 86 degrees. So before I go, I do want to say happy EMS week to everybody and thank everybody for the outstanding work that they do. Thank you for being a colleague, and thank you for hanging tough throughout this nonsense. Guys, love y'all. Have a wonderful evening.
Bye, Doc.
Say happy anniversary to Christy also, please.
Yep.
I'll tell her.
For sure.
Now if I can figure out where the punch out button is.
I'm just going to punch you out myself. Bye.
I like it.
There. See? Yeah. Just like that. Bye, Felicia. All right. Now check this out. This is what I want to talk about. And you're the right guy to talk about it because this is your thing. And we've done this shtick 100 times. But
100 times.
I can't help it. We got to do it today. We got to do it now. And I wish there was 1,000 people on here. Doesn't matter. I want one person to hear this. EMS Week 2020. Rewind it all the way back to 1995. And it's the same story every damn week. No one recognizes us. How come people don't know about us? Blah, 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 blah. This is for all of you that think that. And we're going to talk about one of Ritu's favorite topics. And it's actually become a little secret passion of mine.
Nice.
I mean, at least I like to talk about it because the role that you as an individual play in advocating for EMS, it's so underestimated that the solution to this is for you to take action. And you might think, Well, gee, Mikey V, how do I do that? Well, we're going to talk about it. We're going to talk a little bit about it tonight. And I don't think there's ever a better time than right now. And I don't think there's ever more of an important time right now. You know why? Because we have the attention of the people that matter in the situation.
Yep.
So let's talk about advocacy. And let's talk about our elected officials to some extent. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about our local elected officials.
Mm-hmm.
So let's remind people, and by the way, today's election night in Oregon.
That's right. And I voted by mail last week.
Yes, you did, as did I. We talked about that in our last podcast.
Yep.
The people that we elect into office, let's say your state representatives,
county
elected officials, mayors, county commissioners, whatever you call them in your area, did you know that they are just an ordinary Joe Blow person?
Absolutely.
And we know that ordinary Joe Blow people don't know shit about EMS. And guess what? It's not their fault.
Nope.
Right? It's not their fault. If you look at a citizen, an elected person as a citizen, what's the word you use? A citizen
legislator,
right? Yeah. They don't know. How can they know? Yeah. How can they know anything about EMS? And so who better to tell them than the people
who do it?
Who do it? And I love, and I don't want to steal your thunder, but I have to talk about the truck driver.
Oh, yeah.
You talk about it. You tell it so much better. Now, you got to pay attention because I'm telling you, listen, this is so important for EMS to go for. I cannot explain this enough. So I'm putting the spotlight right on her too.
Yeah.
It's just specialty and just go, brother.
No, we can keep talking. This can still be a conversation, but I usually, when I talk about advocacy, I usually start out, you know, I ask people, how many people here think that their legislators, their politicians, the people who regulate are smarter than they are? And some people actually raise their hand. I'm like, no, really, come on. You think your politicians are smarter than you? But more importantly, I ask them, how many think that their politicians who write the law know more about EMS and healthcare and emergency medicine and emergency medical services than you do as an EMS provider? And of course, nobody raises their hand because they know more about it. So then I say, let's say, I don't know, you get elected to Congress or you get elected to your state legislature and you're a super smart EMS person and you are asked to sit on a committee that has oversight over trade, and your first bill has to do about regulating interstate trucking. How much do you know about interstate trucking?
Only what people tell me.
Right. And so you can read and you can, as much as you can try to learn about it, but you'll never know as much as an expert does. Right. And so it's our responsibility to teach our legislators, our politicians, about what we do and why it's so important. We'll always be there. And to most people, most lay people in our system, and certainly a lot of our politicians, they just picture that it costs, you know, you call 911 and somebody shows up.
Yeah, automatic.
You know, and nobody understands necessarily the training, the expense, all the things that go into place to be able to respond to these emergencies. And especially if you start talking about, you know, high acuity, low frequency things like cardiac arrest or, you know, severe respiratory compromise, all those things.
Trauma. Yeah.
Trauma. And so that it's your responsibility as an EMS provider and practitioner to educate your community, which includes the decision and policymakers who make law and have the checkbook about EMS. That, I think, is our responsibility.
That's all well and dandy, but what does, and we actually have a great case study of this that came to fruition and at Fast 18. I'm sure you remember this, that somebody, did you talk about advocacy at Fast 18?
I did the advocacy talk, the 20-minute kind of no slides.
Yep.
Let's just talk about, I used our case that I don't know if we're going to talk about it or not, if you want, but, and then afterwards, somebody approached me and said, I have this issue. It was Nisa Hathaway. And she said, we have this issue, this safety issue, and we just don't know what to do about it. And so we kind of brainstormed for a few minutes about who had regulatory oversight. This was a tower that wasn't perfectly lit. She's a flight nurse. And it, when it turned out to be like a owned by the city or something crazy, I'm like, well, let's just sit down and figure out who has oversight over this whole area. And we kind of brainstormed some ideas. And then she went back home and she and her friends sort of reached out to their local city. I think it was the city council, or I mean, we should have her on to tell the story. We could, because she's awesome and she has a great podcast too. But they were able to make their world safer by affecting change at the local level in a positive manner, just by figuring out which legislators to reach out to.
Yeah. And that's the Q-Word podcast, by the way, which Nisa and I think a gal named Lisa, they do that together. It's a great podcast. Lisa has nothing to do with medicine. And like we said, Nisa's a flight nurse and, you know, pretty cool cat. And they do a podcast. But that was a perfect example. It's a perfect example.
Yeah. That was great. That was awesome. Like 3 or 4 months later, I got an email from her.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you got it done. I'm like, that's, you made change.
You don't have to. I mean, there's a few rules, right? I mean, you probably want to get your hair cut. You probably want to look presentable. There is ample opportunity for you to visit your elected officials, whether it's a mayor, city council, whatever, all of them. It doesn't matter which one it is, but they want to hear from you. And here's the other piece that, and I'm probably jumping ahead a little bit. Well, and we're going to get to the DEA story here in a minute. There's a good chance that, especially if things are not in session, you might be able to actually get to talk to that congressman or that congresswoman, yep. Right? I mean, like straight up. And that's awesome. But there's a chance you may not get to also. And that was one thing that I know that Ritu talks about a lot, is that even though you may not be able to talk directly to that person, you're going to talk to somebody that has the ear of that elected official. And that is just as important. And don't ever discount the fact that, oh, I didn't actually get to talk to XYZ. I had to talk to one of their people. But their people are there for a reason, right? Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. It's harder at the sort of local level. They don't have a big staff. But certainly when you're talking to Congress, you know, on the national level, they have staff members who have different areas of expertise. And the reality is that the agenda within the office is pushed by the individuals who have that portfolio. And so it's not a bad thing necessarily to talk to a staff person. It could be a good thing. And the other piece is building relationships with staff over time makes a huge difference.
You don't want the only time they hear you is when it's time to write a check about something, right? Like there is so much benefit into creating that relationship well before there's any drama, right? And a great example of that is exactly what Nick was talking about. And that was the 2017 Patient Access to Emergency Medications Act. Well, at the time it was a bill. The reason why that was successful, at least in my opinion, and Ritu was intimately involved in that, was that there was a lot of pre-established relationships.
Absolutely. That's a case study that I often present and talk about. Who here knows all the DEA rules about EMS?
Yeah. So in the comments, if you've read the DEA rules that pertain to EMS, sound off in the comments right now. Yeah. Like, let us know that if you've read those, I'd love to hear from you real quick. And I'll play the damn Jeopardy music or something, but
it's very quiet right now.
It is very quiet, and probably for two reasons. Either one, people haven't read them, or two, people realize that there aren't any fucking rules.
Right.
There are not any rules.
What is Nick says? Unfortunately, yes. What have you read?
Unfortunately, yes. What? I know you read Nick. Yeah, tell us, Nick.
Because I would like to know what rules pertaining to EMS you've read, unless there are state rules, but not federal.
No, we're talking federal DEA rules.
Yeah,
but yeah, that's the thing. There aren't any.
Right.
And so, yeah, can you just tell the NAEMSP story real quick? Like we're only at 48 minutes, so we're doing good on time.
All right.
This is important.
So I was NAEMSP president and we had been having a lot of problem because there are no rules. And what happens is EMS, like in one region, they have one set of rules, and in another region, they have another set of rules. Because what's happening is your local DEA is trying to square peg round hole it, where they're trying to take rules that pertain to hospitals or pharmacies and say that this applies to an ambulance too, which doesn't make any sense, right? And so, you know, Wake EMS was told by their local DEA that they're a distributor, and they had to do, they had to get a distributor's license, which is a lot more expensive. They also, this is my favorite part, they had to fill out a 222 form. A 222 form, so those of you who are medical directors or administrators know, this is the form you fill out when you order meds, order controlled substances.
Indeed. So
when they took a controlled substance out of their safe to put on a rig, they had to fill out a 222 form and give it to themselves to track that, because they were going from the distributor to the rig. Dave Purse, who's the medical director and public health authority in Houston, has 76 different DEA licenses.
One for every rig, right?
One for every station.
Yeah. No, unbelievable.
Because that's what the Texas DEA told him he had to do.
Right. And that's the biggest point that, well, it's not the biggest, but it's one of the major points was, is that there's no, since there were no specific rules, I guess still technically there aren't. Well, maybe there are.
There's a specific law now.
There's a specific law now, but enforcement of those rules from office to office was all over the place. Like there was, you know, it was different everywhere.
Yep. And so the DEA came to us and said, we would like to write EMS specific rules. And we said, fantastic. We actually think that's a really good idea, because we see too much variability. And then the other weird piece is that the DEA license for your agency is actually the medical director's license. So we had cases where medical directors were being fined millions of dollars because the agency had a bad DEA plan. Or in one case, there was a person who, an administrator, sorry, Nick. So they had an administrator who was stealing, and then the medical director got fined $1 million. Ultimately, it got dropped. But so there was all these different and so they came to us and they said, we'd like to come to NAMSP, to your conference, and we'd like to meet with you. We'd also like to do a presentation. We're like, please do. So then we're sitting in my suite, because I had a suite, man, because I was...
Man, it was the suite life of Ritusani back in the day.
It was kind of like a fucking apartment. Like three bedrooms, kitchen. And
this was in New Orleans, right?
Yeah, this was in New Orleans at a pretty fancy...
I'm sorry, Nolens.
It was great because I went to school there, so I was very excited to be back. Yeah. And they were nice people, and they said, you know, we're going to write these rules, but we just need to tell you some things about the rules that we're going to write. And there's nothing in the law, and we can talk a little about the difference between law and rules. I know Nick brought up that he knows the difference, and I don't think everybody understands that, but there's nothing in the Controlled Substances Act.
1972,
pre-Johnny and Roy, I like to point out.
Well, it was right there, because they were 72 also.
Yeah, but I think they were fall of 72 was when they premiered, and the act was in spring of 72. But anyway, so pre-Johnny and Roy, there's nothing in the Controlled Substances Act that allows for EMS to carry controlled substances. And here's the real kicker. The Controlled Substances Act, as it was written then, requires that for every controlled substance delivered, there either has to be a patient-specific prescription or a patient-specific doctor's order. And there could be no protocol, no use by protocol of a controlled substance. I still remember when we talked about this the first time. I think it was when I was just a special guest star on Second Shift.
It might have been.
I think it was because I wasn't a co-host. And I think Eric's face was like, he gave me the, "What'd you say, Willis?"
Right.
What they told us is that the practice of EMS that was being done, which was the delivery of any controlled substance, benzodiazepine, opioid, under a protocol, was illegal.
Indeed.
And so we looked at them, and it was Brent. You know, we said, can we, I guess you just need to measure us for our orange jumpsuits now.
Because you're all going to jail.
Because we're all going to jail.
Orange is the new black.
Orange is the new black. I believe Call Me Piper was what what I said. So we were like, well, this is a problem. And they said, we said, we don't think that that's a good rule, that you should write a rule that way. And their response was,
yeah,
we can't contradict the statute, the law, the Controlled Substances Act. The statute says there must be a prescription or individual patient specific order. And we just can't write a rule that contradicts that. And we're like, well, let's say you have a DEA agent who's like shot doing a drug raid, and our EMS people are taking care of him. Don't you want him to get something for pain? They're like, yes, we want him to get something for pain, but that can't happen unless the law changes. We are not allowed to tell you to advocate for a change of the law, but all we can tell you is that you cannot, under the current law, write a rule like that. So we're like, shit. And then like a month later, we had a follow-up phone call, and it was freaking hilarious. They were like, we were being clueless. They're like, the only way we could do that is unless the law changes. We can't advocate for the law to change, but unless the law changes,
right,
we can't do that. So we're like, oh shit, we need to change the law.
And that's a super easy, no fuss, no muss
problem
situation.
Easy peasy.
You just change the law.
That's right. You start with a bill on Capitol Hill.
Okay.
I'm just a bill. So this is where the piece about a pre-existing relationship.
Exactly.
You know, we had prior to that a number of go arounds, and our EMS kind of advocacy piece goes back to sort of post 9/11, when a bunch of money came out in 9/11 and none of it was earmarked specifically for EMS. There was stuff that went to fire agencies,
of course,
but it was sort of, they could be using it for anything. And so a lot of them used it to buy like, you know, big
rigs,
command stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So there was nothing that went to EMS, and then EMS agencies couldn't apply for any of it. My friend Rick Hunt, who was president of NASP at the time and a mentor to me, met with his local congressperson's head staff person. Her name was Martha Carmen. And he said, you know, how did this happen? She said, well, we had everybody at a table and said, what do you need? And there was nobody there who raised their hand and said, we're EMS. And that's the thing. You have to be at the table. If you're not at the table, ain't nobody gonna notice you. And again, the legislators don't know who these people are. They don't know who needs to be at the table. It's incumbent on us to make sure we have a seat at the table. So from that point, we tried a bunch of different ways to do advocacy. We created a group called Advocates for EMS. We had like any EMT and us and the SEMSO. We had a bunch of different groups try to make an organization of organizations. And that worked okay, and that helped us create some relationships. But then we realized it was there were sometimes competing people had what was important to this group was not as important to that group, and limited number of time and money. And so NEMSP decided, screw it, we decided as a group to sort of disband that on pleasant terms. It wasn't negative at all. We just decided that we were better off doing our own thing, but coordinating well together. And then so NEMSP started its own advocacy gig. And I was one of the, and this was part of that under sort of my presidency. And we had our prior relationship because we were doing advocacy. We had been at the table before. And then we also had a relationship with a Congressman Richard Hudson's office because our main lobbyist actually had known Richard Hudson.
Who's a physician?
No, he's not a physician.
Oh, he's not? He's wasn't not there somebody doctor. Else that was a physician?
Raul Ruiz.
Oh, Ruiz, yeah.
Is the physician. Talk about staff. Lisa knew Richard Hudson from when he was a staff person.
You see what I'm saying?
She was a staff person at the center. It's all about, you know, relationships and treating people with respect and, you know, just because they're a staff person. But anyway, so Congressman Hudson agreed that if he was out doing something and got hurt, he wanted like some pain medicine, or if a family member had a seizure, they'd like some anti-seizure medicine. And we had built a strong relationship. And so from that point, we were able to go ahead and create the Protecting Patient Access to Emergency Medications Act.
Yeah.
And again, was it easy peasy? No, it took a couple of years for that law to pass. And this was a law with nobody opposed to it.
Yeah.
Nobody. And it still took a couple of years. Everybody's like, well, that's stupid. And I would push back that I don't think that's stupid. I think if things were too easy to get done, think of all the stupid ass laws we have now. Now multiply that by 1,000.
Yeah.
If it's important, it should probably be hard. If it's important, it should probably take effort. It took us a couple years to get it done, but we did it.
Yeah.
Well, he also brought up the American Ambulance Association, which actually has a pretty vigorous advocacy arm now. But in 2000,
as does NAEMT.
As does NAEMT.
Right, which is the EMS.
I think AAA existed and did some advocacy, but we were pretty drowned out and they weren't at the table. And we can talk a lot about how we got there and the journey. Let me answer Nick's question first, talk about the difference between statute and rules real quick. And then let's talk about how you can make a difference. And we'll talk about EMS on the Hill. Does that sound good?
Yep.
All right. So as most of you probably know, there's laws that non-experts and non-regulators write. It's the statute. The Controlled Substances Act is the law written by Congress. Well, the way those laws are written are basically they tell the executive branch, you know, the executive branch is actually the largest branch of government, right? Because everything that government does is done by the executive branch. The military, FDA, anything that government does is actually the executive branch that's doing it. It's not just one crazy man at the top with orange hair. God. Oh, shit. I had to put that in there.
You always do.
I know. The legislature likes a law and says, executive branch, we want you to regulate. In this particular piece, they said, executive branch, specifically the DEA, we want you to allow pre-hospital providers to use protocols to give controlled substances. That never existed before. And so that gets put in there. We want you to create a set of rules that regulate how controlled substances are used in the EMS environment. The reason why you don't want specificity in the law is because it takes an act of Congress to change the law. So if you
literally an act of Congress,
right? So when we talk about stroke legislation in our state, some folks wanted to put in the law that you have to go to the closest stroke center, and I'm like, oh God, no. Because if that's a badly developed law, the only way to change it is to go back and change the law, which again, even in a process that we had no opposition to, took a couple of years. So then they have to write rules. And so we're actually still waiting for the rules to come down the pipeline from the DEA about this. And so why, Nick? It's a good question. All I can tell you is that we have met with the DEA multiple times about this and about the rules. We've met with their policy people, and turns out every time we've met with them in the last 3 years, it's a different group of people, because the policy people in that office have turned over 2, 3, 4 times. God help me, I'm going to get a little political here.
So it's not because of the situation?
It's not because of the situation.
Copy.
It's 2.5 years. It was December of 2017 that the law passed. So one of the issues that's happened across the board with the current administration is that there's been not a focus on putting new regulations in place. And so that's part of the reason why it's taking them so long to get this done. When the current administration first came into when into power or whatever they first started, they had a rule that you couldn't write a new rule without removing a rule or two rules. So the, there was an executive order. If you want to create a new rule, and because they wanted to reduce the amount of regulation, I think that's reasonable. I don't think that's reasonable. I think reducing regulation, unnecessary regulation, actually makes sense. And this is like a liberal dude saying that, right?
Unless
we can all agree that unnecessary regulation stifles creativity, capitalism, et cetera, et cetera. Those are all things that we don't want to have. But the DEA doesn't have two rules that they want to get rid of.
No.
And so for a couple of years, it was for a while, it was like, we don't really have permission to write a new rule. When then they got around that, the reality is that they just had continuous turnover in their office.
Yeah.
So my understanding is that there is a set of rules that has been drafted and that they have to send it over to the OMB, the Office of Management and Budget, who has to then review them for fiscal impact. That's still kind of down the pipeline. We were told at one point that once it goes to OMB, it's about 30 days. I was told by somebody who works in the federal government that ain't nothing being turned around in 30 days in the OMB right now, because they're terribly understaffed too. You know,
but you know what? You know what's okay though? Take this time to get your shop in order. Make sure, have you done an audit lately? I mean, are you in a position to where you can do that? Do you know, have you looked at how much you carry on your rigs, your trucks? Is that the right amount? What's your tracking situation like? How do you restock? So I think there's a great opportunity here for people to sort of look inward for a minute, establish where they're at, look what's going on, and then just be prepared, because it's just a matter of time before the rules come out, right? So why not get ahead of the game a little bit, at least have and it's funny because you think you know what's going on in your shop, but maybe you don't. So take a look.
Well, in the current standing of the DEA, I mean, one of the things it says in the statute is that if you know of a diversion situation, you have to notify them. That's not going to change. And so if you find out about a diversion in your agency and you notify them and they come down, you know, you don't know what's going to happen because they don't have a set of rules. What I tell my agencies is, you better fucking know where every vial is. Like I pick up the phone now. Well, my EMS captain happens to be sitting right there. So Mike, you better tell me where every fucking vial is right now and how it's accounted for.
And you know what? I can.
Yeah. Which is fine.
Yeah. And it's not me, but it's a whole team of people that are involved in it. Right? Yeah.
So the day that President Trump signed the law, it became legal to use controlled substances as a standing order. So the way the law was written is that it says EMS is permitted to use controlled substances in the pre-hospital environment under a direct standing order from an EMS medical director. So we purposely wrote it that way so that the day it was signed into law, that was officially legal.
Isn't it the first and only time that the EMS medical director has ever been mentioned in law?
It's the only place in all of federal statute that EMS medical direction exists. And we were pretty excited to get that in there.
It's kind of a big deal.
It's very much a big deal. Yeah. We're very excited. So yeah, that's good. I mean, but like it also directs them to create a program so that the registration, the DEA registration, moves from being the medical director to the agency.
I think that's wonderful.
Yeah. And, you know, the American Ambulance Association and the International Association of Fire Chiefs were 100% behind this. It's a little bit lucky because the person who does legislative issues for the American Ambulance Association is a guy by the name of Sean Baird.
He's been on our show a few times.
We've had him on the show, and he lives close by. He works for an agency that I'm medical director for now. And so Sean's their legislative person. So he and I have beer and talk about legislative issues. And he looked at me and said, we don't understand why it wasn't our responsibility from the beginning. We actually think it's stupid. So they were all in support. But that can't happen until there's rules in place, including like how much it's going to cost and how the DEA is going to manage that piece.
Yeah.
So right now, for instance, for my agencies, I still have, I have a separate DEA for CLAC Fire and a DEA for AMR and a DEA for LOFD and a DEA for Metro West.
Yeah. So
there you go.
Oh, man, so much. So much.
We affect change as a group.
Yeah. So I guess that's what I want to leave you with. You know, make an appointment. Maybe right now is not the best time, right?
There's
no,
there's,
situation that's going
there's no
on.
In-person appointments going on.
There's no in-person appointments. But you know what, though? I mean, I want to tell you that this podcast, I feel like we have never had a series of podcasts go viral like that. We had people from all over the country emailing, texting, calling, making appointments with their local elected officials about this topic.
Yep.
It was super awesome. And I'd love to see that. Like, it's, let's not make it that way only when there's a crisis afoot, you know,
a situation, if you will.
Yeah. We don't need another situation. But again, we do have a situation right now. So maybe when things kind of cool out a little bit, you know, first responders, we've got the ear of people right now. So it's a good time to start making those relationships, make them with your community, make them with your elected officials, and get out there and do it.
But I think there's an opportunity here, right? You have a situation going on. I know I talked to my congressman's office last month because they wanted to know what was happening on the ground. You know, there's no reason why you can't reach out to your local, to your federal congressperson's office now. They might be running through Zoom or virtually, but they're still working, and say, hey, I'm the local ambulance squad in your county, and we would love to just explain to you how we can't get any gowns for our agency.
Yeah.
And they rely on people stepping up. So that's the other piece, is like, how do you get involved? Right. So there's organized ways and less organized ways. I do think it's important to just make yourself visible to your local folks. If you're in a position to give a little bit of money, like my congressman has happy hours, it's like $50. You go and it's a donation to his campaign, and you have beer and wine, and he talks to every single person. And every single person has
something to say.
But here's the other piece, is I talk to the staff, because Kurt's going to have all these pieces. I talk to his staff because they're the ones that afterwards are going to be what came through. Hey, I spent 15 minutes talking to the EMS medical director for the county, and he invited me to ride along on an AMR ambulance. And so I'm going to go do that. And Congressman Schrader, I'll come back and tell you all about it. And so if you have the opportunity to do stuff like that, but all, you don't have to do it politically. You don't have to pay the money. You can also just contact their staff and say, hi, I'm your local ambulance person. I would love to come in and just tell you what we've got going, what's happening in the world of ambulance today, the things we've had to deal with COVID-19, et cetera. I think that's all good to do. And then in an organized way, of course, the National Association of EMTs is the main sponsor of EMS on the Hill.
Yep.
We unfortunately had to cancel it this year because of the situation, mm-hmm. but EMS on the Hill is an annual fly-in to Congress. You haven't come yet with me, Mike, have you?
I have not had a chance.
You should.
I was a Star of Life in 2003. And so I did get to go and do all the hubbity bub and meet all the people and little dog and pony, but yeah. I have not been since.
Yeah. And so EMS on the Hill Day, hopefully we'll have one next year. NAMSP helps sponsor it. And NAMSP also does their own stuff around the same time. But the heavy lift is NEMT. We got to give them credit. It was their vision, and they do a great job with it. And but I would recommend you go to EMS on the Hill. You take a lot of business cards. And I got to tell you, I go every year to EMS on the Hill. The third time back in somebody's office, people are like, then they do these meetings all day. But by the third time back, I'm getting the, hey, you remember you last year? I mean, I was up to, you know, first, I was up to manhug status in Congressman Schrader's office for a while. So it's you create these relationships. And then when there's a problem, when there's a situation, when there's no PPE, you already have credibility with the office.
Yeah. No, I think that's great.
Yeah. But making yourself available and known, they want to hear from you. They're not there. They're in DC. They're in their offices. Their local people are in the offices. They get hit with stuff all the time. And so repetition is really important. Creating a relationship is important.
Yeah.
Important. Providing service. It's really meaningful to them when you say, call on me at any point if you have any questions. So you're providing, you're not just there asking for something. You're offering something back in return. Yeah. Knowledge, hospitality, fucking photo op.
Yeah.
Politician loves to get his picture taken on the damn fire engine, right?
Or
her. They like that stuff. And so, but they want to know that they can call and ask if there's a question or an issue. And the other piece is this. Politics has gotten certainly more partisan, more stupid. 99% of the stuff that gets done, both state and federal, is done under like what we did with really no opposition. And so a lot of things that can help can get done just by having those relationships. There's a lot of legislation that happens, and most of it's bipartisan.
Yep.
90% of it's bipartisan.
I love that. It's good. It's so good. I mean, see, if I just had to put the carrot out there and you would just attack it.
I love this stuff.
I know. It's great. And hey,
you know, I think we positively impact
patients
in a different way.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we could talk about airway shit all day. I mean, that, fine, whatever. But
which I can, I will do that too.
Yeah, no, and that's fine. But I think it's important that people know the other stuff. Politics seems dirty and gross, and sometimes it is. But the reality is it's up to us.
Well, I think people who complain about the law and the rules should shut the fuck up and go to a meeting. You know, there's no rule that didn't happen without a public hearing, without a chance to public comment.
Yeah.
You know, when we talked about the Rhode Island mess.
Oh, right? Boy. Another situation.
But that's, I mean, I think what happened in a lot of that was somebody who had pre-existing relationships was able to kind of work them. So having those relationships in place in advance are certainly very helpful.
Yeah, for sure. Did you know that we had the Sklar brothers on our little live show? How jacked are you?
That was sweet. Love those guys.
It was so cool.
Yeah, they were great. And having them on, you know, they have, I found out today on their podcast that their cousin is an emergency physician in San Diego.
Yeah.
And they just wanted to take 10 minutes. They actually rescheduled their whole day to just take 10 minutes out.
We talked about that whole thing already.
I know.
Okay. I just want to make sure you.
Yeah.
I was trying to save you from that.
I know. I was a little starstruck.
I know. It was so funny. I can't wait to watch this replay because you were like this.
I've had the chance to hang with them a little bit. They came up to do a show, and we had tickets, but Michigan happened to be playing Oregon. What are you pointing at?
Bob Cross wanted to know which one of you are running. I'm pointing to you. I don't know if it's the on my screen. I'm pointing to you. I don't know if
no, on my screen you're pointing to me too.
Okay, good.
Well, Bob, you're absolutely right. I'm not running for office.
Not yet. Someday. I know it.
Wouldn't it be fucking awesome if you're?
I know it's going to happen.
But wouldn't it be amazing if your county commissioner or your state representative was an EMS doc or a paramedic or an emergency department nurse?
Yeah,
I mean, you know, we have a state legislator here who is a primary care nurse practitioner. She's seen my name on emergency department reports from her patients. So now she and I like have conversation. So, but wouldn't it be great if you had an EMS person sitting there? Now I'd have to fucking learn about interstate trucking because I don't know shit about that.
Right.
But we have a bunch of physicians for office in Oregon this time around for state legislature. So that's really good.
All right, let's get out of here.
No, I gotta eat my. Well, I ate half my dinner.
I haven't even eaten yet. I'm starving.
Well, I was hungry, but I was a little nervous.
You had some nerve. Far brothers. I'm nervous too, to be honest with you. I mean, we had always said that we are going to have a celebrity on here.
That's right.
Celebrities, whatever. And so far, they take the cake. So if anyone out there, you know that the seven layers of separation or whatever it is, seven
degrees of separation, exactly. Or the Oracle of Bacon also.
Right, exactly. Same thing. So somebody you know knows somebody famous, let's get them on here. And I tell you, I had somebody lined up to come on the show 3 years ago. It didn't work out. I still remain friends with them. I don't know why it never worked out. But do you remember Free Willy?
Yes.
Do you know the kid that was in the kid?
Yes.
Jason. He lives in Oregon, and he was supposed to come on here. And at that time, that was as much of a celebrity as we could pull.
Yeah. Well, we still have an inroads to somebody else that we can't talk about.
True.
But with the situation,
yeah,
we just can't get down there to meet with him yet.
Get down to LA County and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, all right. Listen, on behalf of Ritusami, Mike Verkest, you've been watching and listening to The Second Shift live on our Facebook channel. Appreciate you guys hanging out. As always, we are a proud member of the Flight Bridgehead Podcast Network and
a Fire Dog production.
That's it. We will see you guys on the next one. Happy EMS week. Stay safe.
Happy EMS week.
Love you guys. Take care. We'll see you later.
Thanks for everything you do.
Bye.
Second Shift is a production of Flight Bridgehead LLC at flightbridgehead.com.